This copyrighted podcast is presented by the U.S. Highbush Blueberry Council. The opinions and views shared by those of non-paid guests on the business of blueberries are those of our guests and do not represent the views, positions, or policies of the USHBC. The blueberry industry is like no other. Passionate, resilient, and innovative. This podcast is your source for the latest information on the management, markets, research, and technology related to blueberry production. This is the business of blueberries. Here's your host, President of the U.S. Highbush Blueberry Council, Casey Cronquist.
Welcome back to another episode of The Business of Blueberries, the only podcast dedicated exclusively to the blueberry industry. Joining us today in his second appearance on the podcast is Steve Magami, co-founder and executive chairman of AgriVision. AgriVision is a vertically integrated grower, packer, shipper, and marketer of blueberries, raspberries, blackberries, and table grapes from Peru, Mexico, and Morocco. They export to established and emerging markets, including North America, the UK, Europe, China, Southeast Asia, and Central and South America, and continue to expand their growing sales operations globally. Steve's career has been in building companies and developing projects. He has generational roots in agriculture and has been active in agribusiness, land acquisition, water, and infrastructure in Peru since 2007. I encourage you to listen to episode 115, which was Steve's first appearance on the show. It's become one of our most popular episodes. Steve, thanks for coming back to another opportunity and interview here on The Business of Blueberries.
Thanks, Casey, for having me back. Great to be with you.
Well, Steve, you just celebrated your 10th anniversary at AgriVision. So, you know, first, congratulations on that. That is a major milestone for any company. But as you reflect on that time over 10 years, what stands out to you as some of the most pivotal moments in your company's history so far?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, as we celebrate our first decade in business, and as we kind of have completed the first inning of the ballgame for AgriVision, and we're proud today to be getting the reaction from the consumers that we're getting. I would say that's probably one of the most, you know, one of the most satisfying things is to be getting emails and to be getting written, you know, by our consumers around the quality, the eating experience, how we're really driving the consumers back to the product that they have had a lot of, let's say, mixed experiences with over time. And that is a result of quality. It's certainly a result of the investments we've made. It's certainly a result in the hard work by our team in ensuring that freshness, that quality, that eating experience, which obviously starts with our varietals and the microclimates we select for those varietals, and it goes through to a lot of tech, a lot of know-how, a lot of hard work, and I couldn't be more proud of that. At the same time, we've been mission-driven. You know, as you know, Casey, our commitment to sustainability has been fundamental from day one. And so we've been on a mission to transform lives while we evolve in our journey to inspire consumers to live a more nutritious and healthy lifestyle. As I look back, proud of our commitment to sustainability and the impact we've made, proud of our commitment to quality and the impact we've made on consumers. And I think we've just scratched the surface, and it's already showing me the impact we can make together as an industry if we put the right quality on the shelf consistently through the year.
Well, and I know you talked about your company's focus on being a mission-driven, and I know I recall an article that was featuring you and talking about being a purpose-driven organization. And yet there's challenges that come along the way over 10 years. So, you know, one of the things that I read in that article, certainly talking about your vision, your mission, your purpose as an organization, that you were out to prove the doubters wrong and remain outcome-focused. And so what have been those doubts along the way? You know, what was that intersection of challenge that you faced over the last 10 years, looking back, you know, those milestones of overcoming challenges that you've faced as a company? There had to have been many, and is there any that stand out that you look back on and made the company stronger, you stronger, drove the purpose further?
Yeah, I think certainly our speed of growth, you know, has not been seen in the industry. And there was certainly a lot of doubt whether we could accomplish, you know, our vision in terms of our excitement to grow and scale with excellence at the rate we have. I think that to think that we would have created, you know, arguably the largest premium berry operation in the world, 2,000 hectares of blueberries in half a dozen years, Casey, from a starting point, was an enormous achievement. But you know, we've always believed that in putting kind of long-term value and return above short-term profitability. And so we've been committed to coexisting with this social responsibility standard and preserving the environment, uplifting these communities in the way we operate, becoming the best employer that we can, and reaching 15,000 people at the peak of our season from some of the most impoverished areas where we operate, and creating an economy, you know, at a new level. And so today, as we think about the business, as we celebrate our first decade, we have growing operations, you know, now not only in Mexico and Morocco and Peru, but we've stood up these new operations in Mexico and Morocco in a fraction of the time we have done in Peru, which was already done very quickly. And now we're standing up operations in India and China. And the doubt around, could we invest the capital we did in the last 6 years, over $350 million in the right way? And we couldn't be more proud of that. And so as we look out now, as we execute on the next phase of our growth, as we continue to expand on this vision of becoming the world's leader in superfruits, in a truly vertically integrated way, truly leveraging advanced technology, truly leveraging the next generation of genetics to deliver that better eating experience reliably year round. This is our greatest challenge now, is doing this with truly premium varietal, premium quality fruit every week of the year.
That's a huge challenge. And I think for a leader like yourself, both in your company and within the industry, how do I put this? It's a very difficult time to be leading in an industry or for a company. And so, you know, I would say, you know, lots of change. There's a lot of uncertainty going forward from here, you know, but what's motivating you? What keeps you focused? And what challenges are you seeing in that space of serving as a leader in your own company?
Well, certainly the world's focus on health and nutrition and what we can do in serving that and in addressing that is very motivating for us. As we think about elevating this healthy snacking experience, I think, again, we're well positioned to capture this kind of consumer opportunity to live a more nutritious and healthy lifestyle now. And so we want to be driving this incremental value for the category and for the retailer to the consumer. And so clearly we all know the berry category has been moving towards a more premium eating experience offering. But how do we align the right microclimates with our varietals to serve this year round? It's very complex. And so this kind of gives us, represents an opportunity to drive this repeat purchase and increase consumption and provide tremendous value to the retailers.
Yeah, and we just had a guest retailer keynote, Melissa Byland at Walmart, join us in Tucson during our conference. And what was interesting about her conversation was, you know, just her explaining to us that Walmart, you know, in particular is looking at, you know, just consistency. They're not looking for perfection. They're looking for, you know, a consistent quality product. And just the beginning of them looking at, you know, the premium category as almost a pilot test. And I wanted to get your reaction to that, because you're shooting for next level in terms of a premium experience. And that's difficult for a company like Walmart to scale. So, you know, what's your sense of the both and in that, that you've got this challenge of being able to supply with the volume that a company like Walmart needs against, you know, the evolution of the experience that we want consumers to have, that is what you're describing, which is those premium eating experiences, the ones that the new genetics are providing for today.
Yeah. So first of all, I completely appreciate Melissa's comment, and I look forward to talking with her about that. I think as we think about this, clearly now the question is, what are the drivers to allow this to happen? Meaning to allow both the consistency and that next level of premium eating experience year round. Very difficult, right? But, you know, as we think about what we're doing, we believe we can add a disproportionate amount of value to our retailers and our consumers because of some things that we're doing, starting with the differentiated product. Our Fruitist brand is something that we're building. I'll talk a little bit about our brand on the show today, but we're putting resources, we're putting real support, real weight behind this brand to build this. We're getting great feedback from the brand. The Fruitist brand is now nationwide in most of the top 20 retailers. but we have a long way to go. The real vertical integration, really growing this ourselves, really controlling the quality, really aligning the quality with the sale, with where the fruit is landing, and controlling it every week, right? And not in a blunt way, in a very precise way. This control over the quality, this control over our supply, this management over these key attributes or the key drivers of what we think are part of the solution, in addition to our control over the pricing that we are charging, right, as the vertically integrated grower supplier, we think are part of the solution. And so that continuity for the retailers is our number one challenge. And again, what are we doing now in market, in our in-market facilities, you know, in terms of their capability in market with our facilities on the West Coast, East Coast, how we're rolling things out, allowing us to truly control in-time deliveries, helping us, more than that, helping us generally solve our retailers' problems, but in a disruptive way, not in a traditional historical way. So we're working closely with our retailers to help solve these problems.
Yeah, no, this is great. And I do want to jump into this conversation about the vertical integration and the way that Fruitus plays into that and that brand in particular going forward. But before we do, it's time for our crop report. Our domestic season is just getting started in Florida, and we also have reports coming in from Peru, Chile, and Mexico. So here, once again, is your blueberry crop report.
It's time for your blueberry crop report, an update on crop conditions and markets from important blueberry growing areas. Today, you'll hear from Brittany Lee in Florida, Jody McPherson in North Carolina, Brody Schropp in Michigan, Darren Wheeler in Georgia, Luis Vegas in Peru, and Mario Ramirez in Mexico. This was recorded on April 4th, 2024.
Hello, this is Brittany Lee with this week's Florida Blueberry Crop Update. There's steady increase in volumes across the state, with all regions picking all varieties. There was no significant damage reported from the major storm that crossed the state yesterday. Farms in the Arcadia area are peaking now for the next week and a half. Central Florida farms along the I-4 corridor will be peaking next week and the following, and North Florida farms will be peaking in about 3 weeks. Organic production in the north is ramping up as well, and growers are reporting bird and disease pressure is low and labor is sufficient. Thank you.
Giving the crop report for the state of North Carolina, yesterday we received about an inch of rain, no damage from the weather event that passed through. We will be experiencing 4 days in the upper 60s, lows in the 30s. Our extended forecast for North Carolina will remain in the 70s. And with that, that will extend the beginning harvest to the second week of May. We're anticipating 40 million pounds fresh, 10 million pounds processed.
Hey, this is Brody out of Michigan. Michigan, there's not a ton of report as we're walking into spring, but some of our bushes have started to break dormancy with some unseasonably warm weather a few weeks ago. But lucky for us, we've caught a string of a cooler stretch here, which has slowed the progression of our bushes and put us more on track. So right now, I would say grower optimism is high about the 2024 season, and looks good so far.
Good morning. This is Darren Wheeler. I'll be giving the crop report for Georgia today. Georgia has been in a growing degree deficit as we approach harvest of the earliest varieties. This week is expected to be approximately 25% below normal for accumulation of growing degree days. First scrap of picks of Meadowlark, Sentinel, and Georgia Dawn and Rebel are taking place this week, despite the cooler than normal weather. Many varieties, including Patricia Optimist, are showing lead blue fruit. Next week, week 15, weather patterns are expected to warm up. The 30-day weather forecast is showing an average temperatures and average growing degree days. All varieties, with the exception of Legacy and the later portion of Key Crisp crop, are sized green berries. Most varieties are changing color to some degree. Crop is still heavier than 2023, but temperatures and weather in late May will determine how much of this crop we can harvest for fresh and maintain quality. That is my report for Georgia.
Hello, this is Luis with the crop report from Peru until the end of week 13, which is the week that ran from March 25th to March 31st. So far, this season that started back in week 18 of 2023 And until the end of week 13 this year, Peru has shipped a total of 493 million pounds of fresh blueberries to the world, which is 22% less volume than the volume shipped during the same period last season. The US remains as our main destination for Peruvian blueberries, representing 56% of the total shipments so far, followed by Europe with 28%, China with 12%, and other markets accounting for the remaining 4%. Of the total volume shipped, 10% have been organics. During week 13, Peru shipped a total of 1.22 million pounds, which is 35% less volume than last week and 61% less volume than our initial forecast. The US market represented 73% of this volume, which is expected to arrive the US market during the third week of April. The other markets where Peru shipped blueberries last week were Europe with 5% of the total volume, China with 2%, and other destinations with 20%. This has been the report from Peru until the end of week 13. Thank you.
Hi everyone, here Mario with the Mexican Blueberries Report for week 13. During this week, Mexico exported a total of 7,900,000 pounds of fresh blueberries worldwide. 90% goes to North America with 7,600,000 pounds. 13% of the total volume were organic blueberries. It is 1 million pounds of fresh organic blueberries exported mainly to North America. This week, the volume is 8% lower respecting previous week, and it keeps lower than the previous season for the same week, 28% lower volume. The frozen volume for this week is 7,200 pounds, and it represents only 1% of the total United States frozen blueberries importations. The total volume, including fresh, conventional, and organic, and frozen volumes is 74,320,000 pounds. That's all in my report. Thank you very much and see you next week.
Well, thanks so much to our busy growers and colleagues who take time to participate in these reports. As a reminder, you can go to the USHBC website at ushbc.org/data to find our data and insight center. To see more data of what's happening in our blueberry industry, please visit us there at ushbc.org/data. Okay, let's go back to today's conversation with Steve Magami. Steve, you were just talking, we want to unpack this a little bit for our audience who may not understand the vertical integration between AgroVision and the Fruitist, but talk a little bit about the brand Fruitist and where that brand started and where it is today and how it's developing going forward from here as part of that overall plan that you've had.
Yeah, so the brand started only a couple of years ago, Casey, and the brand started as a truly premium varietal, premium eating experience brand. And you will find that the Fruitist brand is probably best known today by its Fruitist Jumbo label. The Fruitist was created as a brand for our own fruit. As you know, Casey, we are completely vertically integrated, truly vertically integrated, meaning growing ourselves, selling ourselves, packing ourselves, importing, exporting, managing the whole chain ourselves. And we're here to really understand what is working, what are the opportunities for, again, for optimizing along the, you know, across the chain, innovating across the chain, whether it's farm level, post-harvest, obviously quality is always in our minds. But then shelf life extension, how do we carry that freshness through? This is all wrapped up in the Fruitist brand that we're building. And so it's a very friendly brand. It's a brand that we want to have fun with. We want to have fun with our consumers. We want to work with our retailers to really resonate with our consumers. We are focused on the family. We are focused on the youth demographics. And again, there's a lot of tech that's wrapped up in this and a lot of know-how that we're deploying.
You mentioned that, you know, the Fruitist brand is just for a premium experience, or there's a standard that's set that goes into that clamshell that maybe not the rest of the AgroVision berries can make it. And so talk a little bit about what percentage of AgroVision production goes through the Fruitist brand versus, you know, what's sent to other marketers or doesn't make it into that clamshell.
Yeah, so we're, as you know, we have been, we started off with relatively open varietal and relatively starter varietal plantings. And as we started to scale the company, virtually all of our plantings over the last 6 years have been in premium varietal and premium fruit. That doesn't mean that everything makes the Fruitist label. The Fruitist label is, you know, is a label that we're very focused on kind of building that consumer repeatability, consistency experience with this brand being a brand that they can trust. For example, our Jumbo right now out of Mexico. I would say that the majority of our product is making an incredible spec of a Jumbo, the crunchiest blueberry you've ever had. Truly enjoyable, not acidic, really truly balanced in terms of Brix acid ratio. And there's a lot we're doing to achieve that. And so we're making investments across our tech stack. There's a lot of investing of our time, but also capital in technology. And it always starts with that quality aspiration first, shelf life. And so there's some pretty interesting things we're doing around that, Casey, that we think will allow us to show our retail partners that we're coming with the next level on freshness and quality and shelf life extension, but we're also going to be extending this now to continuity and repeatability of that consistent eating experience.
Well, and I guess I'm just curious because, you know, in that spec that you're talking about, you know, it has to be going to the Fruitist brand or that clamshell in particular, you know, not every blueberry, even on a bush that's in that premium category, grows up to be the Ferrari you're expecting it to be. And so you end up with a bunch of Chevys, if I can use the car brand analogy here. You know, how do we manage through that traffic?
Yeah. So ultimately, a long-term commitment is needed here. Serious resources are needed to face the kind of the opportunity, but also the challenges here and to succeed as an industry long-term. So what are we doing? We have already been replacing, call it those first generation plantings, those first vintages that we planted. We've been replacing those with our newest varietals. We're going to continue to build our portfolio of varietals across microclimates. And we're going to continue to build out the portfolio with the newest kind of generation. And we're going to continue to replace the oldest generation. We're going to continue to commit resources to providing and elevating the consumer experience through different products. So, you know, we have the Fruitist Jumbo, we have the Fruitist premium brand that is not a Jumbo, and we're coming with different products. We think that there's an enormous opportunity to provide different opportunities for the consumer through potentially different micro brands, et cetera. So we're working on that. We're working with our breeding partners on this. And again, this is going to be a function of a commitment that's long-term. There's going to be a lot of kind of hard work and capital required to evolve the different levels of product that are out there, as you say.
Well, and I think it would be good to just unpack a little bit about what you think it's going to take to realize the ultimate success of that consumer coming to the category, the buy rate of that consumer. Well, let me bring it to an example that we've just seen, you know, announced recently from the Fruitist, which is the investment to sponsor a Major League Soccer team. And, you know, a clear decision on your part to go B2C and try to partner with a sports brand. What was the decision tree there for you? Because that's one evolution of your brand that's moving forward to try to bring consumers into this category. And I want to just learn a little bit more about where that came from and what your hopes are for it and how that fits into the bigger picture of marketing to consumers.
So the DC United brand is, like a lot of sports, is all about the youth. It's all about families. The demographic is very much aligned, right, with the Fruitist brand's demographic. We are focused on the youth. We are focused on families. We are focused on health. We are focused on wellness. So we saw a lot of alignment there with this great sports team. This is one of the top MLS teams. And we saw this as another example of our innovation, one of the first sleeve sponsorships in the MLS. It was ironic that, or coincidental that there was a major sleeve sponsorship announced in Europe days after we announced ours, and that was for, you know, much larger level. But I think the point here was we're showing you we are getting behind this brand. We are getting behind the consumer, that we are getting behind the youth. We're getting behind families. And ultimately, this is just the first step. as we think about what are the things we can do to support this brand. We're launching new marketing campaigns as we speak, Casey. And again, we hope that everyone has a chance to try the Frutas Jumbo label as well as the Frutas Premium label. And so we want to be offering not only the largest berries available, but those with the same standards of crunch, of firmness, of eating experience. And then what we're going to do with the labels, we're going to have fun. These are going to be distinctive. The packaging is going to be distinctive. We're going to offer new significant growth opportunities for our retail partners.
And in Tucson, I'll go back to a conversation we invited both Soren at Driscoll's and Juan Ignacio from Hortifruit on the stage, part of Nature Ripe. You know, two large brands in this business, but recognizing that, you know, even in the conversation where the conversation was again about quality, consistency, and raising the bar as an industry to, you know, invite that consumer to consume more, buy, maybe sometimes for the first time, that no one company is affording to do the work that it takes to market the category at the largesse as some of our competition, which would be CPG companies in the grocery store, or, you know, pick your favorite brand product that has the kind of resources that Walmart works with or any of these big retailers work with to pull in that consumer to the product. And we're not operating that marketing dollar at a level. So where do you see the future of that collective marketing going in ways that marry up against, you know, the work you're doing, the work that others are doing to really drive the category? What's your vision for, you know, that working relationship? How do we collectively work together as an industry from your perspective to spend the kind of resources that it's going to take to really move that needle?
Well, there's no question that there's an enormous opportunity for education, Casey, of the consumers. Most consumers have no idea how much we have elevated the eating experience of blueberries today. They have no idea that there's almost a different product out there than what they're used to. The reaction we see from first-time consumers, we watch their reaction. It's game-changing. We're watching the conversion of consumers from those that buy blueberries once every 4 or 5 weeks to those that are not only buying every week to potentially super consumers. We're watching that evolution. So there's no doubt that there's this enormous opportunity for education. And how do we do it as an industry? I think that's the big question.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting challenge because we have, you know, our new vice president of global marketing and communications, Kevin Hamilton. You know, he was responsible, you know, working for the Avocados from Mexico program, which he personally architected those Super Bowl, those decisions on the Super Bowl spend. And it's interesting too, because, you know, there's been a lot of good conversation around what more is needed. It's a true challenge as an industry that we face because, you know, you've got companies like yours who are investing in these premium brands. And like you said, there's just a consuming audience who have no idea what we're working on as an industry that, you know, we would want to grab their attention. So I don't know. We're working on that right now. I mean, it was part of what came out of our conversation in Tucson is, you know, what more is needed. And I think that challenge really that we're facing, Steve, as you know, is a dual mandate of, you know, how do you keep prices high while bringing the volume to the retailers through the retailers or food service, food ingredient. And it is a true challenge. I think that's one that, you know, we're tackling as an industry, and no one marketer is going to take the responsibility for everybody to market in such a large way that's needed or necessary. It takes leadership. It takes a collective effort of the group together. So I appreciate your thoughts on this because I think, you know, those are the things that we're working towards as an industry, certainly at the USHBC, and a lot of opportunity we see in how to bring that collective investment and interest together to do those big things.
You know, this conversation excites me. It's probably for another time for us to delve deeper into, but the youth, from my standpoint, from the research we see, Casey, the youth have not seen the product that we can offer today. And the potential consumption with the adoption, with the education of the youth, driving the next wave of growth in consumption, the prospects there are very compelling. Why can't we have our products in sports stadiums around the country? We can. It's not rocket science. But I think the question is it warranted? Is it justified? Does it make sense? I think today it does. I mean, maybe for the first time ever, this product is that good. And so how do we make that happen? And what does that lead to, right? The vision I have with the youth is a whole different level of potential we have as an industry. And that truly excites me.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you're definitely focused, I think, probably on the fresh side when you're making that statement, just the ability to invite the youth into the fresh experience. But on the non-com side, we talk about that in food service. It's amazing to me, you know, to your perspective of just where there's opportunity in providing access at schools and the opportunity there to, you know, use our procurement program, the buy program with USDA and the federal government to invite, you know, school districts to take advantage of that innovation and what they can do with blueberries, because it is such an easy piece of fruit to work with in the cafeteria, you know, attracting the next generation into a category who then sees the category at fresh and then, you know, just has to have it. And I think to your point about where that youth is insisting on it, almost like, you know, I hate to say like a status symbol, but maybe it's a status symbol of health or just an eating experience, but an excitement that they have to have it in the cart. It's just so important that they have that pack of blueberries as part of going shopping. How do you get to there? How do you make it so enticing that they just can't get past that first aisle and not grab a clamshell?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I will not forget the first time I walked into my daughter's preschool, Casey, and saw her and all of her classmates eating cuties. And this was probably around the early days of when we were starting to plant that next generation of genetic varietals, that, you know, we had this vision to elevate the eating experience. I think today we're ready. We're ready to start, you know, seeing classrooms of the youth snacking on blueberries.
That's an amazing vision. And are we ready? I mean, one of the things I wanted to ask you about, you know, given your investments in Peru, is just what happened in Peru this season that caught us all, I think, a bit, you know, surprise as to just how much it was going to change, and just your sense of what happened and how that impacts going forward from here as an industry and certainly, you know, future seasons there in Peru.
So this was, I think, the future accelerating by years, right? I think we thought this could happen, but when you have 70% of the most important country in the Southern Hemisphere, the number one exporter in the world, planted in varietals that were bred in California and Mississippi, how does that make sense? That only kind of makes sense for a certain period of time. And so to see this weather event impact those antiquated varietals, first generation of varietals, which I think is what we saw, I think it highlighted for everyone the importance of alignment. And one of the things I've talked about in this call that we're working hard on is to ensure optimal alignment between varietals and microclimates where we're planting. And so I think the other thing it showed our retail partners was, you know, this is a great time to adopt the premium fruit because you're not paying much more when prices spiked from the shortages. And so we hope that looking back, it was a great opportunity to kind of accelerate adoption now of the better eating experience fruit. And I think as a consequence, the U.S. received a lot more of Peru's, or should have received a lot more of Peru's premium fruit, which again is only, you know, is only a small fraction of the total volumes that are exported from Peru. So I think that is the question now, is what is the future of that 70% that should be replaced with more aligned varietals to the microclimate, but that are also better eating experience. So it almost looks like Mother Nature is helping us, is pushing us to start to head into the future here and start to leave the past behind.
Well, and talk a little bit about, you know, just in terms of the challenges ahead, then what keeps you up at night about the blueberry industry? I think a contraction like that, you know, I don't know how personally you felt like it affected you, but whether it's another weather event or market dynamics, the economy, you know, Steve, what keeps you up at night? What do you see as that challenge ahead?
Yeah, I mean, from my standpoint, we're so obsessed with the quality that and the freshness that we're living in a world of divine discontent. We're just not happy unless we're seeing that continued elevation and enhancement. The other thing that I wouldn't say keeps me up at night, but the other thing that we need to kind of think about as an industry is when you see, because of high prices, poor quality fruit put into the market, into the fresh market, and what that does to the consumer's eating experience, right? Now, how do we educate a consumer when they only have so much time in the day to understand what's happening in the industry. When they are experiencing that poor quality fruit, now convincing them or educating them on what we really have as kind of the new generation of the new product, the new kind of blueberry 2.0 is that much harder. So I would say that is something we have to overcome as an industry somehow. And I think the retailers are absolutely behind that. I think the retailers this season, we heard a lot of them say, you know, we're not taking more Chilean fruit, for example. In the last few weeks, we've been hearing that. I don't want to paint the whole country of Chile with that brush because there's going to be some excellent premium varietals in Chile. But by and large, you have a similar problem where the vast majority of Chile is planted with varietals that need to be changed. And so I would say those are a couple examples of what we're seeing.
But I'm glad you brought up Chile. You know, that was one of the things we announced in Tucson was, you know, our trip to Chile, because I think, you know, as you're describing, Chile represents a region and a production region in particular that is reinventing itself right now, you know, really trying to determine its own future on the varieties, the production there. You know, it certainly has been impacted by the largesse of Peru's production into the U.S. market. And there's just an interesting, I don't know if I call it a case study, but something that, you know, we're all going through as an industry watching Chile again, I think, you know, kind of reinvent itself as you're describing your company investing there still, and a trip that we're planning to go there as an industry as part of Destination Chile this year. And I think that's going to be an exciting opportunity for all of our industry to jump on that trip and go take a trip out there. And maybe we'll go visit, you know, AgriVision out there in Chile. So I appreciate you bringing that up. Last time we talked, you know, you spoke about your vision for where blueberries are headed in the future. And you did a great job there kind of comparing cuties in the classroom and kids. But when you've got somebody, you know, in just a short amount of time, like we have here on the podcast today, you know, what is that thing that you share? How would you answer that question today? The vision ahead at USHBC, we're looking to make blueberries the world's favorite fruit. For AgriVision, what do you say?
Yeah, what I would say is innovate. What I would say is, what are we not doing that we can be doing to elevate the eating experience, to enhance the product quality? You know, I think increasingly, how do we educate, how do we align with our retail partners to kind of separate the product quality that's not there? We have three farms in Oregon, Casey, and we're continuing to plant across the US. Again, we want to be achieving that 52-week continuity of this next level of eating experience, but we're going to hold ourselves accountable on the quality as well. And again, it's in this long-term commitment that we as an industry need to make together for that continuity. Can we achieve that together as an industry? That can't be a handful of companies that are truly doing what it takes to achieve that. It needs to be more of us. And I know there are others. I'm not saying it's only us, but I think that is key.
Yeah. Well, this has been a great conversation, Steve. I do always appreciate, you know, your thoughts, insight, and again, congratulations on 10 years, because, you know, for any company, and like I said about being a leader today, it's not easy. A lot of dynamics taking place at the same time, but, you know, congratulations on your 10th anniversary. That's a great milestone. And I appreciate your time today on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, and I look forward to our next conversation. Let's put insights on the agenda for that one.
That's it for episode 166. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with more innovation, collaboration, family, and hard work right here on the Business of Blueberries.